Yeah, it was very formal.
Really?
If you, when you listen to the other ones, you...
Okay.
Silly Conversations, the podcast. Your host, Denzel Mills.
On another podcast, Silly Conversations is somebody, I think one of the brainiest persons I've ever met. Ever. And Sandra. Sandra's going to tell you a little bit about herself, but I'm going to tell you one thing which I've never told her, and it came to my mind when we were planning or when I was organizing this podcast. The first time I met Sandra, and she was recommended by somebody for some classes. And the first time I met Sandra, we met in a bar, and one of the strangest things I saw was she poured the Coca-Cola from about 6 meters high in the sky because she says, I like Coca-Cola, but I don't like the bubbles.
Very true.
And then at that time, she was taking some classes because she was preparing for her PhD.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you were one of the very first people I helped with the preparation for the PhD. And when you, Sandra, now Dr. Sandra, really I should call her Dr. Sandra, really. But mm-hmm. when Sandra started to tell me about what she was doing, believe me, I had nosebleeds at night because I had no idea what she was talking about. So for your entertainment, for your education and for your enjoyment, very good friend. I actually consider Sandra as a friend, you know, Dr. Sandra. Yay. So Sandra, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about me.
Thank you very much, Denzel. I like that this is quite silly conversations.
Because it is silly.
So, I'm Sandra Sevilla. I'm from Valencia and I'm a vet, but I did my PhD, as Denzel explained, in microbiology, well, specifically in virology, and I work with bacteriophages.
And these
are viruses.
And these were the things, when the first time I heard bacteriophages, no idea. Okay. Now I know something. Now I remember some things as well.
Yeah, of course, I think that you can do also a PhD about phages.
Well, Sandra, I mean, a PhD. maybe
you're quite a specialist.
A one-page PowerPoint, maybe, but a PhD? No.
So I did my PhD on phages, that are viruses that kill bacteria as an alternative to antibiotics.
So this is one of the things, because when you first told me about this, I actually asked you, really, what are bacteriophages? So we're going to put a bit of formality to this. So explain to the audience, and at the time of recording, by the time you come out, I think we should have at least 3 listeners and maybe 1 subscriber. So what is bacteriophages?
Bacteriophages are viruses that only kill bacteria as an alternative to antibiotics. I like to highlight this part because normally when you say viruses, you think about the COVID, for example.
Exactly.
And you think that we are crazy, that we are using viruses and we are going to kill everyone, but not. These kind of viruses are not able to infect eukaryotic cells, which means cells from the human, animals, or plant being.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of virus, what do is that they recognize bacteria, they infect the bacteria, and they kill them.
And my next question is, because I remember when I asked you once about this, and I then was very surprised, where do you get phages or bacteriophages? Where do you extract them from?
From the environment, because
what kind of places did you tell me you can extract them from?
Feces.
Now, I don't know if I can say shit on this thing, but you're extracting something from feces and mm-hmm. then using it to cure something else.
Yeah. Well, I extract from feces because I started doing this work targeting Salmonella,
mm-hmm.
which is a gastrointestinal bacteria. But also you can take these phages from wastewater also,
mm-hmm.
from hospital or from slaughterhouses or from farms.
Yep.
And why we can extract it from there? Because Bacteriophages are the most ubiquitous entity in the world, which means that you can find it everywhere.
You see, now using this word, you can tell she's a PhD student person. Ubiquitous. Huh? This is a word. Sometimes I have difficulty saying this word. I'm surprised it came out correct the first time, ubiquitous. So, hey, maybe I can do a PhD in something. Saying the word ubiquitous. The other thing is, because I think, I don't know, it's been a long time since we've known each other and helping you with this and etc. Why or what was the interest to get into that side of investigation?
Well, because now what it is called, we are in a pipeline phenomenon, searching for new antibiotics. So it is estimated that in 2050, the main cause of human deaths would be that we do not have antibiotics to treat bacterial infections.
So what's the problem with us or humans or animals with antibiotics? Because I've heard this on the news when they've talked about people becoming, or things, people, animals, etc., becoming more resistant to antibiotics. And is this the cause?
Well, the thing is that people or animals are not becoming resistant to antibiotics. It's that the bacteria that infect us or infect the animals are becoming resistant.
Right. Okay.
So that's the point, that we have the bacteria are evolving, having more resistance. So then when we want to treat a simple thing, that a throat infection.
Oh, this could be good. I get a lot of throat infections.
It's that comfortable with the antibiotics we are using that it makes nothing to them. So we need some alternatives to
We wouldn't say makes nothing, doesn't have any effect on them.
Doesn't have any effect on them.
So you've been doing this now for a long time. And I one of the great things was, I think it was just before the summer, and you got in touch and you did a presentation. How many people did you do the presentation to?
I don't know how many people were in the
auditorium
in my speech, but the Congress was more or less for 2,000-3,000 people.
You did this presentation, and how long was the presentation?
It was 20 minutes and 10 for questions.
So you did a presentation in English, correct?
Yeah.
And also you answered the questions from the crowd, which were random questions, yeah? So how did you feel? Because I remember talking to you and I said, remember when we started? And when you look now, could you have ever imagined this whole process? Even in Spanish, doing a presentation to 2,000, 3,000 people is something quite difficult and quite an achievement in terms of professional career, etc. But then doing it in another language, your second language, I think that's quite an amazing achievement. So what did you feel? Doing that presentation, what did it feel like?
Nervous. This was my first feeling, but it was quite exciting.
But in what sense?
Because it pushes you out from your comfort zone. So, and I like to be out from my comfort zone. So, for that point of view, for me, it was quite exciting, and also you feel proud of what you have done.
I felt proud of you, and I wasn't even there. I mean, I looked at the presentation, but I wasn't there. But I feel very proud of you, so that was quite cool.
Yeah, it's quite rewarding that showcasing your results in front of such people and, well, showing what the research you are doing. It's really rewarding.
But also, because I remember you were saying that it wasn't totally scientific, because obviously you had a range of audience members.
Yeah, that's true. But at least. For me, I don't know if the word is I like, but I think that it's quite nice to do this kind of presentation, because from the point of view of research, it feels like you are doing a lot of work, but it is still in the lab.
Yeah.
No one knows how a research is overcoming and how it's being developed. So this kind of presentation opens doors for collaboration with companies and for other researchers. So
in the future, because at the moment, as I understand from you, the idea of phage therapy or bacterial phages is still kind of relatively new and looking for approval, yes, amongst the health agencies or whatever for investigation. But if imagine if you had that approval, imagine if the health agencies, European and American, had that, what potential applications could it have for the future? Let's say in 25 years' time, what impact could it have?
Well, that you will have, I say it like a new therapy, because it is not something new. It is, phages were discovered even before antibiotics.
Okay.
But you will have new tools to treat people, to treat animals, to treat plants. And also you will have new or another complementary tool for disinfection processes. I think that one of the goals or objectives of phage therapy is to have an alternative.
Mm.
That if you have a bacteria that is quite resistant to any antibiotic or disinfectant, you are not aware about it because you know that you have some kind of therapy that is phages that you can use it.
Yeah, yeah. And because you know, in our little conversations over time, you know, these years, etc., because I know you've been to given talks, not just in Spain, but you've given talks in other places in Europe, yeah? About phage, whether in Spanish or English, but you've given conferences or attended conferences about this.
Yeah.
And what's the general perception from people, maybe, well, in Spain and also in Europe, where you've given these talks and conferences? Is it resistance from people, or is it interest, curiosity?
The thing is that when I do this kind of presentations, the audience is not really objective, because mm-hmm. most of the audience know phages.
Okay.
Because it's a congress about bacteriophages. But it is true that when, for example, in this congress here in Valencia, one of the questions was about, okay, that you are applying viruses. So from view, I think that we are in research, but it is quite important educational and work with normal people that do not work with me.
Normal people like me. I'm a normal person. No, I understand.
The knowledge about phages or people that don't work with this.
But is there resistance? For example, I was talking to Xavi and we were talking, you know, he had a few health problems and we were talking that he kind of is moving or tries to stay away from chemical type medication, drugs. Where it's necessary, he takes it, but obviously he's trying to move to more alternative or plant-based or something like that. And the people from the traditional chemical drug industry, do you get a lot of, here's an expression, pushback. Pushback is like resistance. A lot of people saying things contrary to your opinions or ideas. So is there a lot of pushback from the traditional chemical industry?
No. With the people I've explained how phages work and what are the benefits, the drawbacks and so on of this therapy, comparing with antibiotics, they understand
and
comparing to antibiotics, no.
So have you got anything up and coming, any more presentations, any travels to do, whether it's in English or Spanish, regarding your work? Because now, well, it's studies, but also now it's actually work. Now you're actually doing it. So any travels or any more presentations to do in the near future before the end of the year?
No. What I have is a lot of kickoff meetings of the new projects that we are starting with phages. International, most of them, but not any congress or a presentation. I can relax.
And you need to relax. I remember this woman getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go and do things, traveling and going to work. I said, what time do you get up, Sandra? 4 o'clock. Why 4 o'clock? Because I needed to go and do some things. But then getting home maybe at 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock in the evening and doing this week after week. It's amazing she's still alive, to be quite honest.
This is research work.
The last time we actually physically met and had the chat, you told me you were managing people now.
Yeah.
So, first of all, that was a serious part of silly conversations. Now we're going to get into more normal day-to-day things. What's it like? You're a researcher. What's it like managing people without going into too much detail? But now you're moving from researcher, papers, presentations, and now you're managing people. What is it like? How do you find it?
It's nice.
You see,
I like it. Now, my team is quite good team.
One thing, even though we're doing this via Teams, okay, so you can't see, but when somebody smiles and then say, it's nice with a big smile, that tells a lot of difference. But it's difficult, yeah?
Yeah, well, you have to develop new tools just to treat them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I started in the lab, I was alone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have my PhD, my supervisors, but I did my work alone. Mm-hmm. I was in the lab. If something didn't came up as I expected, so I repeated. But now, I'm not alone. So everything I do, it's with people.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm explaining well myself. But I like it because I have two really nice PhD students. I have two really nice technicians, and also I have some researchers, and they work really hard. And from my point of view, I think that the most important is that all of them are really eager beaver about what they are doing.
Well, eager beaver. Eager beaver. Well,
I read this in a book, so
eager, yes. Eager beaver has a slightly different thing, but anyway, eager, yeah. So an eager beaver is really
enthusiastic about the work they're
exactly
developing.
But eager and enthusiastic, yeah, you can say the same, but eager beaver, yeah, very eager. But then, in total, how many people are you kind of managing now, directly or indirectly?
Directly, seven.
Seven. And do you think for researchers, because this is one of the things, you know, you university, you do your PhD, you do your doctorate, you give classes. But in terms of maybe developing scientists as managers, because in the end, if you're very successful or if you're successful and you get into a position, you're going to be managing people. And do you think it's one of the skills or something that should be maybe highlighted as part of studies at university or at master's level or something that people should develop or should be aware of from a university? Or is it something that you just pick up and you learn once you've finished?
I think that maybe learning it in the university is too late.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest learning it in primary school.
Okay.
From the very beginning. Because maybe once you are in the university, you have more or less built your behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And to change or modulate this, it's more difficult than doing it when you are a child and you are learning the feelings.
So basically you're saying that really this idea of managing yourself or communicating or working with people should be something that should be installed much earlier in the education process, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. So everybody from the education world who finds this podcast in 10 years' time, just remember this. Governments, everybody, started at a very young age. And if not, Dr. Sandra will find you and I will find you and we will kill you. I don't know if you can say you can kill somebody on a podcast, but anyway, we will do that.
I don't know.
But anyway, yeah, what kind of activity are you doing apart from work? You know, what kind of things are you doing to disconnect, to relax? What kind of sport or activities are you getting into now?
So this weekend, I'm going to start a diving course.
Diving?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know.
But
you're going to like it, this.
Well, I don't know, because you know me and water, we're not very good with water, you know. But where you going to do this? Where you going to do the diving course?
In Alicante, or in Javier.
Ah, right, okay. And then, how long is the training session for the diving or the training course?
In this case, 3 days. We are going to do Saturday and Sunday to divings.
Mm-hmm. To immersions.
Yes.
I know the technical terms. You see, I'm very up to the with the technical terms of immersion, because I gave a class for a long time to a person who did diving, and so I know these terms. You know, it's amazing.
So Saturday two immersions, Sunday two more, and next weekend one more, five immersions.
And then you get your sort of certification to say that you can dive to a certain
open
depth.
Diver, yes. Oh, okay. Certificate.
But why diving? How did it all start, the idea of diving?
Oof, because 2 years ago I did it one.
All right.
Yeah, I like it a lot, and then I've traveled to Tenerife.
Mm-hmm.
I did it one more, and this summer I did another immersion. And then I say, okay, I want to do the course because I want to go deeper than 6 meters. I would like to dive until 12, 18, just to see different fishes and different animals.
Well, yes. Well, depends. Fishes, yes. Animals, you never know. You might find the Loch Ness Monster. Do you know about the Loch Ness Monster? You know about the Loch Ness Monster, yes?
Yes.
You've heard the story, so maybe. Maybe as part of your whole investigations, you find the Loch Ness Monster and then you add that to your curriculum.
Well, in fact, the thing is that in the sea is the highest amount of bacteriophages are in the sea. So maybe also I can hunt some phages in my
So you just won't stop.
Everything is related.
You won't stop working. You know, you'll go there and you think, let me just take a little more, a sample from here and keep it into a Petri dish or something. And are you still doing, because I remember you were going running and hey, Sandra, I started the gym.
Oh, really?
Yes. I started the gym and I've been doing very well until this week. And as a person who used to go to the gym quite often and do many things, didn't you? You did boxing as well.
Yes, but I stopped and I started running, as you said, but I had an injury in my right leg. I have an stress fracture.
A stress fracture?
Yes.
You see, running is not, I mean, unless you're an Olympic champion or something, but running, it's not a cool thing. It's not a cool thing. And then have you been... What else have you been doing kind of in the meantime when you're not working, which is very, 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 very rare, travels or things? What have you been doing?
I'm running. Now I have started.
Oh, you started back again running?
Yes. Yeah.
So how long did it take for you to, I suppose, for the stress fact, that how to say it now?
3 months.
Thank you very much. Now, let me just say, because I can pronounce this word, stress fracture. There you go. You see, I can say it. Stress fracture. So it took about 3 months, yeah?
Yeah, 3 months. May, June, and July. Then I...
But what did you have to do? Just relax or you had to do some...
Not doing anything.
Okay. Did you put on any weight?
Sorry?
Did you put on any weight? Because you're quite dynamic and things, so not doing anything for like 3 months. I don't know if you... put on weight or you were just normal or...
I think that it was normal, but maybe if you ask this to my family or to my boyfriend, they will say that maybe I was a little bit stressed. And
because really the activity you do is to kind of take away some of the stress, yeah?
Yes.
Ah, very good, very good.
So, yeah, I went back for running and I like to read books. I like
running. Hang on a minute. Let me just think. Went back running. No preposition. Went back running.
Okay. Went back running.
There you go. Okay. I am an English teacher. Fantastic one as well. Went back running.
The best.
One thing. Because again, just going back. When I was talking to Chavi and we were talking about he works in IT, AI, artificial intelligence. Are you using AI now to help with some of the investigations you're doing, like modeling or something like that, or it doesn't work in your field?
Not yet. I'm involved in a project that they are going to use it mm-hmm. just to see, to make some matrix of infection between bacteria and bacteriophages. Mm-hmm. But we have not started yet.
Because you've got 7 people to work with you. So that's it. Just make them work hard.
They can do it, yeah.
Exactly. Just, don't you dare look at ChatGPT. Just work harder, you know. And then, are you doing any of these European projects? Are you still working on any of these European projects? Because, I mean, at one point you used to do some manage, or you were like the project lead on some European projects. Is that all finished now as well?
Yes, they have finished. We have asked for 2 projects, but we are waiting for their resolution.
Do you have any plans for the near future in terms of maybe travels or something like that where you're going to be using English more often?
For travel, the thing is that I use English every day in my work with my collaborators out from Spain, from emails. And for traveling, I'm going to Ghent in October.
Ah, yeah.
And to
is this for November. Work? So Ghent is for work or?
Work.
Okay. But what are you going to do?
I have a meeting. There is a annual general meeting for poultry diplomates. There are people that are specialists in poultry.
Yeah.
And we are going there just to have a meeting.
And the menu. Are you going to be eating chicken on the menu?
For sure. Chicken, eggs, whatever. Everything that could be.
Everything that comes from the chicken, from poultry, is going to be on the menu.
Yes, it's in the menu. Yes, of course.
Fantastic. And what do you think of my idea about the podcast? Because you're a native speaker, Spanish native speaker. You're showing, or you're talking about, well, how it's been useful for you in terms of work, or necessary, because the investigation world or scientific world generally is in English. Okay. But tell me a little bit your story of learning English, because I don't know if you did it the traditional way, like most people at school, classes, etc., etc., etc. Did you go abroad and study abroad? What was your English journey? Let's put it this way. What's your English journey? That's a nice question. I ask nice questions when I think about it.
My English journey. So I start learning or studying English in school. Mm-hmm. Then I started university. So I stopped with English. I stopped English. And then I start my PhD. And I realized that I need English because my PhD was the document, the final thesis was in English, and also the presentation of the PhD was in English. So I start with you. and
life has never been the same again. I don't know if it's for the better or the worse, but it's never been the same.
The better. Then when I start with you, the objective was to take or have or the advanced level.
Well,
surprisingly, I have it. Maybe.
Not surprisingly. But also, it wasn't really for I remember, I know why you had to have the advance because of some places where you were teaching, but you didn't really need it because you were good enough anyway. But obviously, that's the way it works.
But being able to improvise, if I have a phone call, just to being able to chat with English native speaker. Because it is true that for email, for writing, you have a lot of tools that you can use. And now you have ChatGPT that is quite useful for this. But for the conversation, for me, it's the most important things and what I need. You know, Denzel, that every time I call you, that I need to prepare this, or let's have some chats, or I need classes just to feel comfortable when I have any kind of meeting or...
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the 7 people who are listening to this and the 3 subscribers, because I know my subscriber count has gone up. This is not planned, okay? And yeah, and it's not a promotion for what I do. It's just Sandra talking, Dr. Sandra. I should really be very formal here. When we have a drink and a coffee together, it's like different names. But anyway,
yes,
we won't go into the different names at the moment. No, but it's one of these things where I think, you know, it's my style. It's all about trying to build that confidence to communicate. And that's the most important thing because, for example, when you said you did that presentation and you had 10 minutes of questions, and the questions could be random questions. It could be questions that you know the answers to, questions that you may have to invent an answer, but you need to be spontaneous. You can't plan the answer or the response to those questions. And I think building that flexibility and that confidence to respond, it may be correct, it may be incorrect. We're not talking about the grammar structures here.
Yeah.
It may be correct or incorrect. The person who receives your answer may be satisfied or may not be satisfied, but at least you can respond.
Good answer.
Exactly. And then maybe next time you think, okay, I could have done this better in terms of responding. I could have done this better in terms of the information, but you responded. You didn't freeze. And that's the important thing. The things you're doing in your team at the moment, mm-hmm. is there, without being very specific or highlighting any particular person, is there anything that you think is really, that's happening in your team that you think, oh, this is going to be fantastic. This is going to get me a Nobel Prize in 10 years' time.
For me, everything is for a Nobel Prize, but it is true that my research is quite, it is not fundamental nor elemental. I mean, I would like, but it is impossible to do everything. I try, but it's quite impossible. But for me, the important, or just to see that my research is directly the application.
Right.
So I do not study why this phage is able or capable of infecting this bacteria, what is the mechanism, which at least is mainly the Nobel Prize are in that way. That is the explanation of why things happened.
But imagine, what would you just imagine? Let's speculate. In the future,
okay.
Just imagine you get nominated for a Nobel Prize.
Mm-hmm.
What would you think? Yeah, what would be going through your head? Now, that silence nothing. Is because nothing is going.
Impressive. I would think this is a joke from Denzel.
I don't know, because this could be the next 5 years or 10 years. But so we know, if Sandra gets nominated for a Nobel Prize, in that moment, nothing is going to go through her head.
Nope.
Now, depending on how long nothing goes through her head could be very interesting, because when the press and the newspapers and the press get in touch and want a statement, if you still have nothing in your head, this is going to be bad news. So by that time, you better have something to say, like, thank you would be good.
Yes. Thank you to my family. Thank you to Denzel.
No.
I will put this podcast. These are my words for the Nobel Prize.
No, you need to thank Mr. Noble and say, oh, for recommending me. So, Mr. Noble, thank you for, or well, he's dead now, but anyway. The group of people, is it a committee? The Nobel Prize committee or foundation people, you need to say thank you to them. And then this is what we can do. Historically, you know, they always go back historically and look at the past.
Yeah.
And then you can look at this, well, not look, you can listen to this podcast and say, this is where it all started. This was part of my origins for the Nobel Prize. Fantastic.
Really?
This was a very serious podcast. I thank you so much, Dr. Sandra.
Pleasure.
Never really called you Dr. Sandra, have I really? This is the only times I've ever called you Dr. Yes, Sandra on this.
I like it. I prefer Dr. Sandra than the other name. I prefer the other name.
Well, the other name really was then, and this is now.
Yeah.
You've noticed my respect has gone up for you, Dr. Sandra, rather than before. But it'd be very nice. And for me, to be honest, I remember saying this to you when you were preparing for that presentation. For me to see where you started pouring Coca-Cola in a glass to get the bubbles out, and the work we did. And I remember the first time you asked me to look at one of your papers for publication, and I had no idea what you were talking about. I could tell you if the grammar was correct and the punctuation, and trying to then understand the readability, but I had no idea. And then to see when you last contacted me and said, oh, listen, I got this thing to do, 2,500, 3,000 people. I actually felt proud. I don't have any kids, but if I had kids, that's probably the sensation a person would have. I'm very, very privileged, because this is why the whole podcast started as well. I'm very, very privileged to have people from a whole range of disciplines, experience, personalities, and I'm very, very pleased to actually know you as a student, but also know you as a friend. And at any stage, you can use my body to inject feces. Well, not feces, bacteriophages.
Phages.
Exactly, because injecting with feces. I think it's a weird thing. That could be like another type of thing. But anyway, and that's it, Sandra. For somebody has this doubt about their English language skills, what would you say about to somebody who always has these little doubts about either their pronunciation, their level of English, et cetera, their nerves when it comes to in a professional, what would you say? What would your advice be? Apart from work with me, of course. What would your other advice be for people?
Yes. Well, I think that what I'm going to say is what you always told me, that the important thing is that people understand what you want to say. So the message to be clear, but this is important. Then it's a question of practice. Maybe the first time you don't feel such comfortable, or you feel that maybe the structure or the grammar could be improved. So the first is that people understand, and then time by time you can improve, you can enrich your vocabulary. But it's a question of practices.
Okay.
And so that's important, that you have to have classes with you to practice this kind of things.
No, it's not about classes with me. You can have classes with anybody. It's about practicing. This is the form.
Reading, listening to English music, films. I don't know. I like to see films in original version.
But this sounds a bit more formal, I have to admit. But what's the less formal thing? You know, that was more like it's good advice. And maybe it's the only advice. If we were sitting in a bar and having a chat, etc., what would your advice be to people? Would it be exactly the same? Or would it be a little bit more, I have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm going to stop there because I'm just talking rubbish now.
No, the thing is that first, if you don't know how to express yourself in English, so then you have to start having classes and then practicing, and maybe not trying to use really impossible or complicated English, just simple.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all. And if you can go abroad, it's the best thing to learn any kind of language.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, having contact with the language, I think in a real environment, because I'm very clear. What I do and when I work is very, it can be an artificial environment. I try to make it as normal, as rich, as interesting as possible, but it's still a class environment. And I think if we can then transfer or translate some of what we learn in the class and try to transfer some of that by traveling, going abroad, etc., participating in Winnie bars, things like this, round tables, if you have this opportunity, then I think it gives you that confidence as well. It's all about practicing. It's all about being confident and building that confidence. And I understand for people it takes time to build that confidence. But you just need to try. And you shouldn't be judging your English language level against other people or other things. We can aspire to things. I don't try to run a marathon. Well, I don't run, so that's a stupid example. But anyway, you shouldn't try to
practice.
Yeah, nobody gets up in the morning. I'd practice, no way. Nobody gets up in the morning and think, oh, I'm going to run 44 kilometers. They do it bit by bit. And I think that's the idea. And you have models you can look at, and hopefully people listen to you and think, oh, this is somebody I can use as a model to try and do something similar in my way, in my style for my profession, my private life, etc. But you shouldn't be saying, oh, I want to sound like Dr. Sandra. I like that, Dr. Sandra. I think when we do our formal things, I'm going to call you Dr. Sandra.
Okay.
But you're looking very healthy, which is very cool. Not that you've never looked unhealthy. There are times when you looked a bit tired, but you're looking extremely healthy, which is very good. And that's it. I'm going to make a formal ending here.
Okay, perfect.
So, Sandra, thank you very much for your explanations. For the audience, all 27, because now the number has moved up over this 35 minutes or so, I would like you to send me a small essay on bacterial phages. Sandra will correct your essay and give you a mark out of 10. The person with the best explanation will get 2 weeks of collecting samples to extract bacterial phages. You can choose feces or water, your choice. This is Denzel with Dr. Sandra in Silly Conversations. See ya.
The voices and the names have been changed in this podcast to protect the wicked. For any grammar, information, or correction, please ask someone else, not me.